This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. And we welcome you to the program. It is good to have you with us. It is February still, and it's Heart Month, so we are going to talk about our hearts and about our cardiovascular health and the various problems that can impact our hearts and what we can do now to change things for the better. We're joined by Geisinger cardiologist Dr. Shikhar Agarwal. We'll be talking today with him about all things heart-related. Dr. Agarwal, thank you for being with us on the program. Let's begin by defining our terms and talk a bit about what encompasses heart disease.
I like to think of heart as a room. So typically what I tell patients is that heart is like a room. It has plumbing, it has electricity, and it has doors and windows. So generally speaking, it is a pump that sits at the center of your body and is responsible for getting blood to all the important organs, including the brain and kidneys and so on and so forth. So any abnormality in its functions that may relate to its plumbing that is equivalent to blockages in your coronary arteries or electricity where people require pacemakers or its doors and windows, which is problems with the valves inside the heart, qualifies as a heart disease.
Okay. And what about like atrial fibrillation? Because that's electricity kind of
connected,
right?
Correct. So atrial fibrillation is a great example of an electrical problem of the heart, which actually is one of the most common heart problems that exist in our community.
Now, is that something that can be prevented, or is that just something that happens?
It cannot be so-called prevented. So atrial fibrillation, I often view it as a marker for other heart problems that may exist. So a lot of people develop atrial fibrillation because of they may have problems with their valves, or they may have what we call left ventricular dysfunction. That means that their pumping function of the heart is low, and that predisposes you to develop atrial fibrillation. So a lot of times when people come to us with atrial fibrillation, before we even get on to discussing treatment options, we actually first figure out that is there a reason why this person actually developed atrial fibrillation. So it often is a marker of other heart problems that may exist, and people may need to actually look into why the patient developed atrial fibrillation in the first place before even starting to treat that problem.
How prevalent is the problem? Heart disease. You know, how many people out there are suffering, and how many die from it?
So, heart disease right now is the number one killer in the United States of America and probably the world. It is certainly a big problem because it affects both young people and the old people, and leads to a loss of a significant amount of productive life that is productive for the community. You know, cancer is, of course, catching up, but in the present day and age, heart disease still is the most prevalent cause of death in America. And, you know, one of the bigger problems with heart disease is that initially people used to think that, okay, heart disease is a problem of the elderly, and only when you are in the 70s and 80s do you develop heart problems. I'm sure that you know of multiple people that are in their, you know, 50s, 60s, even 40s that have trouble with the heart and need treatment, or sometimes, you know, have even succumbed to heart problem. The two main things in my mind, and, you know, that's kind of my area of interest too, that so-called kills people. One of them is coronary artery disease, which is blockages in your coronary arteries. And the second is valvular heart disease, that is problems with the valves like aortic stenosis. And fortunately, we now have very good solution to both of these problems, as long as they get picked up reasonably early.
And that's an interesting catching it early if you're having a heart attack is I understand a really a big key. I was just reading an article
They said a growing trend is people thinking, I'm having a heart attack, I better drive to the hospital. But not a good idea because several reasons. Can you kind of explain why it's better to call 911?
Yes, I think that is when you think you're having a heart attack, the first thing you need to kind of knock on is common sense. I mean, I always tell people, hey, if you're having a heart attack, or even if you think that that is the case, I mean, in the U.S. have perfected the way we treat patients or we triage patients that we think are having heart attacks. So there is millions of dollars that have been spent and invested on this machinery. So it works really well. I mean, we have now, even in very remote areas, there are ways to screen for an impending heart attack and get people to the place that they need to go. And that is, it's important to call 911 for a number of reasons. Number one is that most of the EMS services now, they come equipped with electrocardiogram facilities. So a lot of times, the diagnosis of heart attack can actually be made out in your own home. So, you know, you would not even need to drive yourself to the hospital to figure out whether you're having a heart attack or not. The diagnosis can really be made in the confines of your own home. And then if you really are having a heart attack, the EMS can actually activate the doctors, inform the teams that are going to be taking care of this problem. The second thing is that one of the important treatments is to give the patient aspirin. So if the team thinks that the patient is having a heart attack, you're given aspirin, a full dose chewable aspirin, very quickly. I understand that's a common drug, but sometimes you don't have access to it or you don't know, it doesn't occur to you to take it. So that's something that gets into your body very quickly. And number three is that if and when the people have heart attacks, there are consequences in terms of you may lose consciousness, you may have a dangerous rhythm issue that, you know, may actually impair your ability to drive if you're planning to drive on your own, and that may pose a problem to you and your family or even, you know, other people on the road. So I think that for all those reasons, if you think that you're having a heart attack, the best course of action is to call 911, because very likely get expeditious and the right treatment.
Has awareness increased about, you know, I mean, obviously some of this isn't preventable, but the things we can do, exercise and diet, I mean, I always feel like I'm glad I don't smoke. That's one of the factors the doctor always asks about, but there's certainly, room for improvement. But how aware are people out there that just on the average visit to the doctor to say, you know, hey, I know what I need to do?
It's interesting. So, you know, we think of improving lifestyle-related changes in two levels. So one is kind of the secondary prevention, which is the more common variety. That means that you had a problem, you had a heart attack, or you had a personal problem, and then now somebody tells you that, hey, you really need to watch your blood pressure, you really need to take your meds, and you really need to exercise. So that's kind of the secondary level of intervention, and that's, as you can imagine, more common after somebody has a heart attack. I mean, they generally are more watchful of what they eat, and they're more vigilant about exercising. Unfortunately, the primary level of prevention, that means that going to the doctors when you actually do not have a diagnosed problem is still a problem. I mean, we still find people that have heart attacks, that their blood pressure is uncontrolled for a number of years, or they have new onset diabetes. The reason it's new onset is because they weren't ever seen by a primary care doctor, and they probably had diabetes for a number of years, and that predisposed them to a heart attack. So, in my mind, there are a few things that are important: blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, exercise, and of course, what you eat and what you put into your body. Those are five things that, in my mind, are preventable from a lifestyle perspective, and there is still a lot of work that needs to be done with respect to getting people to see their primary care doctors and getting on top of these medical problems. It probably is better than what it was, you know, a decade ago, but I still think that there's a lot of work to be done from the end of medical community.
Is there a ratio of men to women? Is it more of one gender than the other that deals with heart problems?
That's a very, very interesting question. So it used to be that men die more from heart disease and women die more from cancer in terms of if you just look at ratios, but I think that gap is closing. So if you look at just the numbers, men die more in terms of absolute number. But interestingly, what research has shown is that, number one, the number of women with heart disease is increasing very rapidly. And number two is women tend to have more adverse prognosis when they develop heart disease. That means that they tend to have worse clinical outcomes. They tend to die more from heart disease if they develop it. And that's a lot of it is not truly understood as to why that may be the case. Is it something to do with hormonal things? Is it something to do with the genetic makeup or so on and so forth? But we do know that women and heart disease now is a growing serious problem, and women do have adverse clinical outcomes once they develop heart disease.
As obesity rates have gone up, and the American diet is not good, just to put mm-hmm. it mildly. Has that brought these numbers way up in recent years? Or
yes.
Okay.
In fact, I did some research when I was at Cleveland Clinic a few years ago that looked at what are the trends of the risk factors that predispose people to heart attack and stroke. And if you look at the average number of medical problems that somebody has, when they present with a heart attack or stroke, they have just gone up exponentially. So we find that more people now that present with heart attack have diabetes, hypertension, they smoke, they are obese, and so on and so forth. And that just tells us that, number one, it is possible that the incidence of these problems is just going up in our community because of, you know, our diets are only becoming bad and our lifestyles are only becoming more stressful. And number two implication is that patients are becoming more complex in terms of how they ought to be managed. Because if you have more medical issues, it is more difficult to manage you as a patient because, you know, you need so many more things, and it adds a level of complexity to the care of these patients. So you're absolutely correct. I mean, our diet and our lifestyle and the kind of world that we live in certainly hasn't made it any better for some of these cardiovascular diseases.
Any recommendations for people who would say, everybody would probably know that eating donuts is not good for your heart, but what would you recommend? Say, hey, here are some things to include on a regular basis.
The things that one can do, number one, I feel a regular follow-up to your primary care doctors is very, very, very important. There are now standard guidelines that have been floated by a lot of preventive task forces that guide the doctors in terms of how they ought to be taking care of their patients with respect to blood pressure checks, diabetes checks, and cholesterol checks. So that is the most important thing that one can do. Second is, I would say, exercising on most days of the week, even if that means, you know, a brisk walk or a light jog, walking in the malls if that's what people like in inclement weather times. So I think incorporating daily exercise or at least exercise on most days of the week is extremely important. A lot of patients tell me that, you know, I do a lot of walking at work. In my mind, whatever you do as a part of work is not really exercise. So I really advise people that you got to take some time out of your day and dedicate it to exercise. even if you are able to do 15 minutes to 30 minutes of light exercise, it has immense amount of cardiovascular benefits. What you put in your body in terms of food is extremely, extremely critical. As you pointed out, there is now a wealth of so-called junk food that is available everywhere, and you know it is harder to kind of discipline yourself to eat healthy or like healthy food. So I think it is, we should always, whenever we eat something, we always all ought to ask a question whether it is really necessary and is it good for me. Of course, if you smoke, then I think it is of critical importance to quit smoking. I mean, there are now a number of resources that are available in order to aid smoking cessation, and I urge you to really talk to your doctor about some of these resources and how we can help you as medical professionals.
Is it ever too late? I mean, if I'm 50 years old and I've been eating terribly and not exercising, I mean, can I reverse the effects or at least halt them at this point if I start to, you know, improve these habits?
It is never too late. I mean, if you're 50 is actually not, I mean, in my mind, 50 is very young. So if you say, hey, now I know about this and I'm going to do everything possible to you know, make my cardiovascular health better, it's a great idea. I mean, it certainly is possible with lifestyle changes and medications to control your risk factors to halt and even reverse your blockages to some degree. So I would say that it's never too late. Please, whenever you learn about it and whenever you develop motivation towards living healthy, it's never too late.
All right, great. And you just made my day by saying 50 seems very young. So.
My expertise is in valvular heart disease, so I actually see a lot of patients that are well into their 90s and, in fact, offer surgical procedures to them. So 50 in my mind is extremely, extremely young.
Wow. Okay. Thanks, Dr. Agarwal, for the heart update on today's WPGM Community Forum. And we thank you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the Community Forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.